Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What would you do to help your children look normal? Would you try hormones to either speed the natural onset of puberty or artificially delay it to give their bodies extra years to grow? Would you let doctors break and stretch or shorten their bones? And would the side effects and the tens of thousands of dollars you paid for the treatment be worth it in the end? For about half a century, medical science has experimented with a variety of treatments designed to stunt growth in children expected to be exceptionally tall, especially girls, and spur it in kids who might fall far below average heights, especially boys. Christine Cosgrove is a medical journalist. Her new book, written with Susan Cohen, chronicles the results of efforts to normalize the growth of kids whose physical development strays off the charts. It's called Normal at Any Cost: Tall Girls, Short Boys, and the Medical Industry's Quest to Manipulate Height. Chris, welcome to Think. I want to start with this because we hear a lot about how height influences people's ultimate potential for success in life in terms of career advancement, even salary. Can you give us some perspective on what those studies actually tell us about people's potential?
Well, I think the study that most people perhaps know about is a study that shows that boys who are taller earn more money. And it's not exactly... it's a little bit bogus. There are a couple of things that seem to play into that, and mostly it's the child's height when he is 16 years old. So perhaps it's the fact that a boy who is 16 is better prepared. If he's a tall boy and he's feeling self-confident, maybe that translates later on to more success in the business world. Other studies will say that a couple of years of college will make a huge difference in earning power, and that's far more important than a couple of inches of height.
What do we know for certain about the psychological and social risks for a person whose height is expected to be far outside the norms?
Well, for years we thought that boys who were going to be very short suffered terribly in school growing up, and that translated to a miserable adulthood. But there have been recent studies in the last 10 or 15 years that kind of say that they find that that's not really true, that most of these shorter boys do just fine. And in any case, the option of giving them growth hormone to try to boost their height won't do much good in the short term. If a child is getting bullied, and many children do throughout the school years, you really have to intervene right away. And hoping that growth hormone will boost their height and cause kids to stop picking on them won't do any good. But there are a lot of other ways to deal with it, mostly getting a little bit of psychological help for the kids so he can learn how to respond to the teasing and put an end to it.
Yeah, and in fact, that psychological treatment is almost always less expensive than whatever other methods parents might turn to help that boy grow taller.
Far less expensive. Mm-hmm. It costs, I think we figured out, about $52,000 an inch to put a child on growth hormone. And then some parents will go the additional length of adding other drugs, which are also very expensive, drugs that will delay puberty, for instance, giving the child more time to grow taller.
So let's talk for a minute about the nature-nurture balance in terms of the factors that influence how tall we grow. How much of this is just in our genes?
An awful lot of it is in our genes. Although a good environment, good nutrition, it does play a considerable role. We know, for instance, that the Dutch are the tallest people in the world. Nobody knows for sure why that is. They weren't always the tallest people, but they believe that it's really good prenatal care, postnatal care, just good living conditions in general cause people to grow taller. So there definitely is a relationship there, but a lot of it is genes, and we haven't been able to fiddle with those genes up until now. we're kind of on the brink of learning how to control those genes, and the question that we raise in our book is, do we really want to?
Yeah, and there are also questions, and we've talked a lot about kids who appear like they'll be very short, but there have been Herculean efforts to keep girls from growing too tall.
There certainly have, and I was one of those girls. Starting in the late 1940s, doctors in Boston learned sort of by accident that they could keep tall girls from growing too tall by giving them high doses of estrogen, which would feed them into and through puberty, allowing their long bones not to grow as long and causing the growth plates to close. And that became a very popular treatment within the next decade or so. And it's still done today, although not with the same huge doses of estrogen.
Yeah, you wrote about one patient that had 100 times the normal amount of estrogen in her system.
Yes, that was a typical dosage. And unfortunately, the drug that they used initially in most cases was diethylstilbestrol, or DES, which became rather an infamous drug because it was used in pregnant women in an attempt to prevent miscarriage, but in fact caused all kinds of reproductive problems and cancers in their sons and daughters. So that drug was used in tall girls as well up until about the mid-70s, and then the doctors switched over to ethanol estradiol, which is, nobody really knows if that is a whole lot better, especially when given in large doses to developing girls. This was a practice for several decades, and it's still being done, unfortunately.
And the idea of speeding puberty in a girl is that a year or two after she gets her period, she pretty much stops growing, typically.
Yeah, generally. I mean, everybody's growth pattern is different. But for the most part, once they start menstruating, they stop growing or grow very little afterwards. And so that was sort of the plan behind this treatment. And there were a lot of parents who were very interested in getting this treatment for their tall daughters, especially mothers who felt that they had been, quote-unquote, too tall and had missed out on, certain advantages, found it harder to get invited to dances, go out on dates, meet a man, what happened over the years is the culture changed dramatically, particularly with Title IX and more women going into sports. So the doctor who was really instrumental in starting this program at Massachusetts General in Boston told me that, at first it was women who were going to be 5'8", at least they believed they would be 5'8". They treated those women, and then it was 5'9", and then 5'10", and then 6 feet, and then pretty soon he said he just didn't have very many more customers.
You're 5'11 now, is that correct?
A little bit, yeah, 5'11 and a half.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how the decision was made in your family when you were growing up?
Well, I think what happened, and this would have been about 1964. I had probably gone through my growth. I was 14 years old, and I'd grown something like 4.5 inches the previous year, and my mother was a little concerned that I might never stop growing, took me to the family doctor who said, seems normal to me, but go ahead and take her to an internist in our rather small town. There were no pediatric endocrinologists in my town growing up, so this was the next best thing. And he determined that I might continue to grow a while longer based on my family history. My father had grown rather late in life. We were a family of late bloomers. So the decision was apparently made, and I think there were conversations that I was not included in between the doctor and my parents that we should try this. I think my mother was more concerned with it than my father. But that was because she was 5'9 and a half, and she had always felt uncomfortable about her height. So the drug of choice then was DES, and I started it, and I had a lot of bad side effects initially, a lot of nausea, vomiting, weight gain, depression. Finally, I adjusted to it, and I was on it for 5 years, huge amounts of estrogen. I still grew to be, I probably was about 5'8" when we started this. I still grew another, almost 4 inches. So I'm not sure it worked. And in fact, a study done, not long ago in Australia, showed that most of the girls who took part in this treatment thought they would grow taller than they probably would have. In other words, the height prediction methods are pretty faulty, especially for kids who fall at either end of the height scale. And so it's not clear. I guess I will never know how tall I might have grown. Maybe it did no good at all. Maybe it cut off 2 inches. But it's been a worrisome thing ever since, knowing what we know now about the effects of estrogen. And so I think that's also one of the reasons that the women in Australia who were studied were, the women who received the treatment were less satisfied with their height, even though they were slightly shorter than another comparable group of tall women who were tested but ultimately did not have the treatment. And they were perfectly satisfied with being tall women. The treated group was less satisfied and more worried about the future.
Well, I have to wonder, you know, after several years, and for you it was 5 years, of focusing so intently on how tall you were, that sort of has to become an all-consuming thing.
Well, that's absolutely true. And that's a problem that both short kids, boys in particular, who are getting shots, injections every day for sometimes 5 years.
And for them, it's to put off puberty.
Well, it's a combination of things. The growth hormone is to boost their height. If they decide that they want to put off puberty to give them longer time to grow, that's another drug or a couple of drugs that are used. It's the medicalization of a social problem, or what is perceived by others as a social problem. You know, I think for me and for a lot of the girls who were treated, we were perfectly fine as kids with our height. We didn't really notice it very much. I came from a tall family. And it wasn't until people started focusing on this that it became more and more painful in a way. And I think, you know, some people are better able to cope with that than others. We're all different. But, you know, in my case, once I was done with it, I forgot about it until years later when I was having some reproductive problems, and I thought, I wonder if this drug had something to do with that.
Medical journalist Christine Cosgrove is my guest. Her new book is called Normal at Any Cost: Tall Girls, Short Boys, and the Medical Industry's Quest to Manipulate Height. Coming up, we will talk about the new methods that are being used to control height in children and how tall they grow as adults. You're welcome to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can get ahead in today's tough economy with hundreds of courses beginning this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Christine Cosgrove. She's a medical journalist whose new book, co-written with Susan Cohen, is called Normal at Any Cost: Tall Girls, Short Boys, and the Medical Industry's Quest to Manipulate Height. You can join us by sending email to think@kera.org, or you can call 1-800-933-5372. I was really astounded, Chris, to read in this book the fact that for decades, very little of this was truly regulated by the FDA in a way that we would consider acceptable today, particularly when you're dealing with children.
That is correct. And that's because, to a large extent, it's up to a doctor. If a drug has been okayed by the FDA for one use, doctors are still able to use that drug off-label for other uses that they think may be beneficial. So that's one reason that this has happened. There's also been huge pushes by the pharmaceutical industries to get the word out and bring in customers for human growth hormone. When kids were first treated with human growth hormone derived from the pituitary glands that were taken from cadavers back in the early 60s and 70s, only 2,000 kids or so a year needed this drug. And these were kids who were hypopituitary dwarfs. They were like the Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz. Their bodies did not make enough growth hormone for them to grow properly.
This is an actual medical condition as opposed to being just cosmetically too short.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the federal government distributed the drug to these children and their families free of charge, but that was only maybe 2,000 families. When Genentech got into the market with its bioengineered version of human growth hormone, the market really needed to expand for them. They'd spent a lot of money developing this drug, and 2,000 kids really didn't cut it for them. And so the marketing department got into kind of spreading the word. And over the years, the market expanded and expanded, and other drug companies, Lilly, Serono, other companies got into this market. It's now a very large market, and that's because they managed to get the drug approved for conditions other than just hypopituitary dwarfism, to the point in 2003, rather, that the drug was approved by the FDA for use in just very short children, kids who made enough growth hormone on their own, but were at the very bottom of the of the yardstick, so to speak. And this has the potential to really increase the market, because if you think about it, there's always going to be the lowest 1% or 2%. If you increase the height of the lowest 1% or 2%, they go up, but then the next group becomes the lowest 1% or 2% kids, you know, in terms of short stature. So the market has grown considerably, and there are a variety of reasons, but a lot of it is marketing.
And as you alluded to, with saying that you weren't sure if it worked or not for you, I had a relative who was treated as a boy and now stands about 5'3". Unless you have identical twins as a sort of a control, there's no way to really know whether this ever actually has an impact.
Exactly. We looked pretty closely at the various height prediction methods that are out there, and they are not very reliable, frankly. And you know, nobody knows for sure how a child will grow. Some kids are small all the way through high school, and then suddenly have a big growth spurt. You just really can't tell for sure. So a doctor might treat one of these kids with growth hormone, and the kid and the family and the doctor all assume, well, it really worked. But in fact, it may not have been the growth hormone at all.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Megan in Dallas. Hi, Megan.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Hi. I was calling just to comment that I am currently 5'10". I'm 30. So I've been a 5'10 since I was 15, and I love being tall. I did have a bit of an awkward stage in the fifth grade when I grew 5 inches in a couple of months and ended up being 5'7". And I think for a while it was a little hard to deal with. But as an older teenager and a young woman, I've loved being tall. And we just had a daughter, my husband and I hope that she is taller than I. So our family really embraces being tall. My brother's 6'5". My cousins are 6'6", and those are the girls and the guys. So I kind of am the runt of the family, but we enjoy being able to see on top of refrigerators, you know, be able to look out across the horizon and see what's coming. So I wouldn't mind being taller, actually.
Well, congratulations on your new baby.
Thank you.
Well, that's the thing. The culture really, really did change. In fact, I have sitting here on my desk an advertisement from the Harvard Crimson from a few years back, and which it's a want ad, and it says, quote, intelligent, athletic egg donor needed for loving family. You must be at least 5'10" and have a 1,400-plus SAT score. So, I mean, that is such a change from 30 or 40 years ago. And you look at girls' basketball, volleyball teams, and they're all 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". It's a huge change in the culture.
And they're often considered absolute knockouts.
Right. Well, look it. There's Michelle Obama.
Yeah. On the other hand, Chris, you know, Megan points out that the standards have changed for girls. You even write in the book that it's unlikely that we will suddenly turn around and find a 5-foot man the most attractive one.
You know, that's very true, and we have sympathy for kids, young men going through this, and we spent some time with a psychologist, a wonderful psychologist named David Sandberg, who we talk about in the book, and he worked at the time we interviewed him at a growth clinic in Buffalo where he saw a lot of short kids, and his job was to sort of work with them, tease out what was bothering them, if the short statue was bothering them more than it was bothering the parent or vice versa. And then what he called, he would say, what I do is help them tell a better story about themselves. And, you know, I think at this point that's it's a good way to go. These kids, especially in school, they do take a beating very often, unless they have a really huge personality that they can somehow summon to go beyond what kids are doing to them, teasing, the bullying. So we understand that it's rough on very, very short men, and it's but we're just not sure that growth hormone is the way to go.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Plano and speak with Steve. Hello, Steve.
Hi.
Hi, hello. Go ahead. Hi. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Well, I was just had a comment that my son, when he was 15, was very short. He was about 5 feet and about 100 pounds. And the pediatrician mentioned we might need to go think about growth hormones, and I could tell my son wasn't feeling real good about himself, and just like your speaker's saying, public high school is real, real hard on short, small young men. So I started reading, and I finally got this idea of reading everything I could and all kinds of places. I finally got the idea that he was going nutritionally, he was going into kind of a catabolic state at night. And so I read, and what I started doing is making milkshakes with whey protein and some carbohydrates. I took a page out of the bodybuilder's book, so to speak. And we did this timely enough so that he started doing pretty well and responded and finally grew to about 5'11 and a half.
Oh, my goodness.
And like you're saying, did I catch him on his growth spurt anyway? I don't know, but I don't think it did any harm, and I was happy to avoid the hormones.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call.
All right, thank you.
How much influence can nutrition, and there are certain kinds of sports that people will recommend, does that really tend to make a major difference?
Well, I think nutrition certainly plays a role. Kids who are who suffer from malnourishment definitely tend to be on the small side. There was a study done in England some years ago that showed that boys who went off to boarding school, when they'd come home for vacation, would actually grow faster during their home stays than when they were at school. So there is a psychological thing too. I don't think it's huge, but it goes to show we still don't know a whole lot about growth and what causes it to slow down or speed up. I suspect that Steve's son was a late bloomer and hit his growth spurt and shot up. The story he told is one we've heard a lot of boys who are very short and through high school even, and then just gain a foot in college. So it's not uncommon, and, you know, if he had been taking growth hormones, they would have said it was all due to the growth hormone.
Well,
instead, he had milkshakes.
We should reiterate that parents who make this choice for their children, it doesn't sound like they ever do it lightly or that they ever do it with anything but their child's best interest at heart.
Right. Right. And in fact, you know, we're not doctors, and we think it's very important for parents to make sure that their kids get regular checkups, because growth can be an indicator of something that's not quite right. If your kid is growing at a certain rate and then suddenly falls out of the curve, somebody needs to check into that and see what's going on.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next with Amy in Dallas. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I just wanted to share my experience. I have an older child, and I have triplets, and all my kids are smaller. I'm smaller, and my husband's just average height. But my kids were exceptionally short, and so we did go see a pediatric endocrinologist and ran tests on all our children, and actually only one turned up clinically indicated for growth hormone treatment. She actually was not on the growth chart, so she was under the one percentile, mm-hmm. and was not even sticking to her own individual growth curve. Mm-hmm. And so we did put her on about a year and a half ago, and we've had really great success with it. She's grown she averages 4 inches a year.
Wow.
And she's actually caught up to her triplet sister. And so, you know, our concern was that she wasn't going to hit 5 feet. And, you know, you start running into things like driving issues and stuff like that if you're exceptionally short. You know, I'd love for my son to hit 5'10". He probably won't, and the doctor will not give him growth hormone because he's not indicated for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a good fit for us for the child that needed it.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call. And there's some other families, Chris, that you profile in the book where they may have several children, all of whom will be relatively short in stature, but they make the choice for only one child who's medically indicated.
Right. I mean, if a child is truly growth hormone deficient, the child can benefit and should get proper treatment for that. It's when you've got kids who are just statistically short but healthy. What you have to do is figure out if your child really is not healthy and growth hormone is indicated, that's one thing. But if a child is healthy, and I think parents sometimes get confused with the terminology. They think normal, they hear healthy or not healthy, normal, abnormal, and it can be confusing to parents.
So you can be normal but not average in terms of your height.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Stephen in Dallas. Hello, Stephen. Hi, Stephen. Okay, we don't have Stephen.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, you're
I'm
there. Sorry. Hi, Stephen.
Okay. Hi, how are you doing today?
Great, thank you.
Yes, I just wanted to share my experience. I'm a very tall person. I was in up into my upper 5 foot through middle school. And I just wanted to share my experience of how it can actually go too far in the other direction, being too tall. Being that tall in the neighborhood I was in, I often got bullied by the upperclassmen from the other side. I didn't have very good self-esteem at the time and so forth. From my experience, it just goes to show that it really does need to focus more on the emotional aspect of the whole situation.
Yeah. Thanks very much for your call. Did it take you a while, Chris, you said you were comfortable as a kid with your height. Then after the treatment and this became your focus, did it take you a while to really feel great about yourself?
I think the worst part in some ways was the junior high school age where you're growing and everybody is feeling rather
universally horrendous.
Yeah, there's always something wrong with every kid thinks there's things wrong with him. I think that I just taking the medication made me feel strange and different. My height didn't so much. And I can't say that once I was done with the medicine that I had any difficulty getting over the height problem, feeling odd about being taller. But I was really happy not to be on medication anymore.
Christine Cosgrove is my guest. Her new book is called Normal at Any Cost: Tall Girls, Short Boys, and the Medical Industry's Quest to Manipulate Height. We'll be back in a moment. If you would like to join the conversation, send an email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can get ahead in today's tough economy with hundreds of courses beginning this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Medical journalist Christine Cosgrove is my guest. Her book is called Normal at Any Cost: Tall Girls, Short Boys, and the Medical Industry's Quest to Manipulate Height. You can join us by sending email to think@kera.org. On the phone now in Dallas, we hear from Teresa. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Chris. I wanted to make a comment about, I have a son who is 5 years old, and he had neuroblastoma, which is a childhood cancer that grows basically in your adrenal glands. And then because of the cancer treatment, he ended up in renal failure. So he didn't grow for a while, and he was on growth hormone for almost 2 years, and it made a huge difference in his life. And it was a hard, hard decision for his medical team and us as parents to come to the idea, because a lot of people do suggest, or there is some data out there that suggests that, you know, if he was on growth hormone again, he could potentially get another stage of cancer growth again. So it was a hard question for us to face. And, at 3 years old, he knew that he was smaller than all of his peers, which is kind of interesting that you can pick up on that so young.
How are you helping him to cope with this?
Well, he does have a lot of friends that he's been hanging around with since he was just a baby. So it's been helpful because they've all known him. And so he has grown. I mean, and he actually just had a kidney transplant about 6 months ago and already grew 2 inches. So,
wow.
I mean, with the growth hormone, he grew probably 3 or 4 inches in that year and a half. And now he's growing on his own. But, we we were thankful that something like that was available. And, you know, we were very hesitant and there was a lot of questions involved. But, you know, nonetheless, it was definitely something that we took advantage of.
Well, thank you for calling. And I sure hope that your son continues to do well.
Thank you.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Chris, obviously there are things that every family needs to decide for themselves along with their physician. Can you talk about some of the questions that you would want parents to be armed with when they go to see an endocrinologist and start to make some of these calls?
Yeah, I think your last caller, Teresa, makes a very good point. Renal failure is one of the indications that the FDA did approve growth hormone for a while ago and can be very helpful in that situation. And she also raises another point, which is that growth hormone makes kids grow, but it also it has the potential to make other things grow, and I suspect that's one reason why her doctors were concerned, given that her son had had a neuroblastoma. We know that tall people have higher rates of cancer than short people. We don't quite know what the relationship is between growth hormone and cancer risk, but it's there. So, you know, when you do go to your doctor, it's good to make sure that you have a real diagnosis. Why is the doctor, if the doctor is saying your son needs growth hormone or your daughter needs growth hormone, ask what the diagnosis is. Ask if your child is healthy. And if your son or daughter is healthy, then you're looking at a slightly different reason to use growth hormone. Not to treat a disease like renal failure or, you know, some of the other reasons, growth hormone deficiency. So it's important to maybe get a second opinion and make sure you understand exactly what they're telling you in terms of what's going on with your child.
We have an email from Howard in Dallas who writes, I'm 6'7", my wife is 6 feet. We have a 25-year-old daughter who is 6'2". Despite constant reassurance that her height is more of a problem for her than it is a potential spouse, it's still rare to find a man who's willing to date a woman who is taller than he is. Howard asks whether you have any advice or resources for tall women to meet men who don't care about the height of a woman. I know this is a little off topic, but I wonder if it's something that's come up even in your research.
Oh, it definitely has come up. And we do have this what I, as psychologists, sociologists call the male taller norm, and it kind of goes across cultures where we assume that the male must always be taller than his female mate.
Because in any given population, men are almost always taller than women when
exactly.
You go by
mate. There's about a 5-inch difference average between. You know, I think the average height for women in the U.S. is around 5'4", and for men it's 5'9.5". So one of the things that exists that might be a good bet for this young woman, there are these tall clubs, which are just social clubs for very tall people. And I think you have to be a certain height to get in, and I think it's maybe 5'10", 5'11", for women, something like that. And they're all over the country, and they have a good time. They get together for meals or after work for drinks, and that might be one source of finding a taller man. Or if she's happy with a shorter man, you just need to find the right one who isn't particularly self-conscious about such a thing.
Which can be a challenge at any height.
Yeah.
Finding the right man.
Right.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Michael in Dallas. Hi, Michael.
Hello. I just wanted to comment about my personal experience with height. When I was in high school, I was in ninth grade, I was about 5'2", and I weighed like 73 pounds. And I stayed that size throughout the 10th grade and part of the 11th grade. And then like the summer between the 11th and the 12th grade, I grew probably about 6 or 7 inches just over that summer. And so when I went back to school, I was like totally different, and everybody kind of freaked out because I looked completely different. I had teachers that didn't really recognize me because I looked so different. And I don't think I actually stopped growing until I was around 30, maybe even a little bit after.
Wow. And do you have kids, Michael?
I have a daughter now, yes.
Any sort of similarity in her growth pattern?
No, actually, she's just turned 10, and she's about, I think she's maybe 4'6", 4'7", something like that. So I guess she's not old enough to be in that part yet where she'd have the weird growth spurt like I did, but she seems normal so far.
Well, thanks very much for your story. Points out again, I guess, Chris, that you can't be sure if you've finished growing, there could be more time ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah, and did I read in your book or in some of the other research that I did that women tend to, sons tend to be more related to their mother's height and daughters to their father's? Is there any truth to that?
I can't tell you that for sure. I don't think you read that in our book. But I do know that when doctors are kind of looking to predict height, which, as I said, is not always very accurate, but one of the things they do is they look at mid-parental height. And so the way they figure that out is something like they take the heights of the parents and add them together and add 5 inches and divide by 2, I think, for a boy, and subtract 5 inches and divide by 2 for a girl. I may not have that exactly right, but it's something along that line. So it may matter what your parents' height is, but a good doctor will also ask about grandparents and aunts and uncles, because we all know families where there are several siblings, and one may be very tall, and one could be kind of on the short side. It's just one of those mysteries of life at this point, why we end up where we are to a large extent.
Let's go next to Brett in Colleyville. Hello, Brett.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I'm one of those short men. I actually was 4 foot. I reached 4 foot in height when I was in seventh grade. And by the time I was in high school, a freshman, I was 5'4". To those parents whose children don't have a medical issue with this, I was recently talking with my parents because we have a nephew. They have a grandson who is having to make the same decision. I talked to them about why, you know, we did the things that we did and how come it never really bothered me. And my parents' take on this was, we decided we would never let you use your shortness as an excuse, or we would never make an issue of it. And as it turns out, I played high school football. I started at a 4A school and have gone on to be very successful. And even today in my mid-40s, you know, I'll be around some friends who are all normal size, whatever normal is, and I'll just mention, well, I'm 5'4", and they'll look at me like, you're what, 5'4"? They don't really realize. So I think a lot of it has to do with the attitude that the parents take when it's not a medical issue. And that's my comment.
Well, hang on a second, Brett. Are you bothered by people who assume that that would be a problem for you?
No, not at all. It's never been a problem to me. Matter of fact, I play to my size. Now look at Muggsy Bowes. He was 5'4 and played for the NBA.
There you go. Thank you so much for your call.
Uh-huh.
It does seem like parents have a great deal of power over the way their children ultimately feel about their size.
Absolutely. And, you know, when Brett was speaking, it made me think about all the male actors who are actually quite short. We don't think of them as short because they're on the screen and they generally still kind of make the leading ladies look shorter than they are. But Dustin Hoffman, Robert Redford, I mean, there are a lot of them who are quite short, very talented, very successful, and I sometimes wonder what their parents did that was...
It didn't hurt that they were very handsome as well, I guess.
Well,
let's go next to Marie in Dallas. Hi, Marie.
Hello, how are you doing?
Great, thank you.
I have a question. My son gets teased extremely a lot by his height. He's like in the sixth grade, but he's the size of like a seven-year-old. And he grows normally when he takes his annual exams. He's growing at a normal rate, but he's healthy. But it's just, I've told him not to worry about it. You know, he may get a girlfriend when he gets a little older, but it's the teasing that gets him so bad. And he's finding hard to deal with every day. So I was wondering, considering growth hormones, but like on a temporary basis, I said we had at least catch up or something. I don't know how it goes. I hadn't done any research yet, but I don't know how the hormone works. There's more to comment on that.
Can you talk a little, Chris, about how hormone treatment is applied in a case like that, if it is deemed appropriate?
Well, yeah, if he's growing normally, there are some reasons to think that growth hormone, if he were to get it, might actually, it could possibly backfire a little bit. It's not really well understood, but it might be good to have him be examined by pediatric endocrinologists, and they'll want to look at his growth over a period of 6 months to a year and make sure that he's staying within his curve and hasn't suddenly fallen off for some reason. But the other way to go is to ask around and find a psychologist who could maybe give him a few tips, basically, on how to cope with some of the teasing that he gets. We talked to a couple of brothers, both of whom were very short, and one of them had figured out how to maneuver, really, within his school, and he didn't get teased. When people asked him about his height, he had a stock answer, which was something, if I'm remembering correctly, something like, "I may look small, but I act much older," something like that.
Yeah, I think I remember the passage. He said, "I might look 10, but I act 12."
Yeah,
which is a great response.
So, and he just, he was so positive about it that it didn't become a problem, and that was, I think, partly just he had a very sunny disposition, very optimistic, whereas his brother was very bothered and really couldn't deal with the teasing. Just very different personalities, but your pediatrician may be able to guide you to somebody who's worked with kids with problems with short stature, and just help them get through that period, because it does end. It won't last forever, even though it seems, a year for a child that age seems like forever. But if there is truly no deficiency or other medical problem that would indicate a need for growth hormone, then you might try dealing with it in this other way.
Christine Cosgrove's new book is called Normal at Any Cost: Tall Girls, Short Boys, and the Medical Industry's Quest to Manipulate Height. Christine, it's been really interesting. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it, Chris.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@